I thought I'd talk about a subject that everyone is familiar with, probably more familiar than you'd like to be, and that's blame. So I called tonight's talk Buddhatama and the Culture of Blame. There was a man in America who filed a lawsuit against an American airline for the following reason. He was on an internal flight. He fell asleep on board. When they reached the destination, everyone, including the staff, left the plane, turned off all the lights, and he was left there by himself. He woke up in pitch darkness. The last thing he remembered was that he was on an aeroplane, and now he was in pitch darkness, and he put two and two together and made, I don't know, about 15,000. He thought he was dead. So he was suing the airline company for the stress that they caused him, for him being left on the aeroplane and thinking that he was dead. Blame has become all pervasive in society. I'm sure you all in your working lives have to deal with blame. Blame from above, blame from below, blame from pretty much all angles. And of course you have to cover your tracks, so there's so much more bureaucracy involved these days as well. You have to prove that you did everything that you were supposed to in order to prove that you're not to blame when something goes wrong. You see it in all aspects of society, in politics, in work, of course, services, care work, education, and also in our relationships too. There's a lot of blame. There's also a lot of self-blame. So not content with blaming the rest of society, we can very easily turn it upon ourselves as well. There's so much finger-pointing. It always has to be somebody's fault. There has to be a reason. Unfortunately, this has led to a very paranoid society, a very cautious society, a society that doesn't want to be seen to get things wrong. And how might we as meditators fare in this culture of blame? What can we do to take these difficult situations and turn them to our advantage? We need understanding. We need to understand blame. We need to understand its dynamics. Why we do it, how it arises, how to respond when it does arise, and how ultimately to transcend it altogether. I asked myself a question. Why do we blame? I came up with four potential reasons. I don't think this exhausts it at all, but here's four to help you along. Sometimes we blame for personal profit. The politician blames for power. The opposition blame the government. The government blame the opposition. It's a way of getting an advantage, personal advantage. Also, there are all these lawsuits, these negligence claims, these compensation claims. And with the no win, no fee culture that we have, it's always worth a try. I remember many years working at a certain place, and a lady was very, very slightly injured getting into a truck. She sued on the off chance that she might get some money out of it. But now there's a new twist to this particular blame game. Somebody was telling me recently that people have started filing counter lawsuits, claiming stress for having been sued in the first place. So there's blaming for personal profit. Expectations lead to blame. There's the very first sutta in the Pali Canon is called the Paramacala Sutta. And it opens with an account of wanderers belonging to another sect following behind the Buddha when the Buddha was on tour. And one of them was blaming the Buddha because the Buddha was not performing the correct religious practices of the day. The man had an expectation that a spiritual teacher, such as the Buddha, would perform those particular rituals. And if not, then that was extremely blameworthy. So even though he was the Buddha, he was still blamed. The problem with expectations is they will always let you down. No one can comply with our storyline all the time, no matter how much we want them to, be it family members, work colleagues, it really doesn't matter. If you have expectations that a job would be done in a certain way, and it isn't, there will be what we call in Buddhism dukkha. There will be suffering. So expectations lead to blame. Also, wrong views. We blame because of wrong views. At the time of the terrible events of the tsunami, I heard somebody told me that there had been a TV program in which leading lights in various monotheistic faiths were brought together and asked a single question. How could God allow this to happen? When I heard that, I thought, my goodness, even God gets the blame. No one's free from getting blamed. Why is this a wrong view? Because underlying it is a belief that the tsunami shouldn't have happened, that this should never happen, that there must be a reason why it happened, and therefore somebody must be blamed. But of course, as we understand in the Buddha's teaching, the first noble truth is life is suffering, and the unwanted will happen. So holding wrong views can lead to blame. The fourth one I came up with was protecting self-image. The golfer blames the wind when the ball goes out of bounds. He blames his club when it goes in the bunker. And he blames his teacher when the ball goes in the water. But when he scores a hole in one, oh, he's only too happy to take the blame for that, take responsibility for that. We wish to protect our self-image, therefore we blame. Is it always unwise to blame? Here we have to recognise that intention is everything. It may be that in a working situation, a genuine fault is discovered. Perhaps somebody is genuinely doing something in a way that is deleterious to the well-being of the company. But intention is everything. There will be perhaps a genuine fault that has been seen, but it's then what follows that's all important. How is this addressed? Is it addressed with rage, anger, and finger pointing? Or is there the simple recognition that there is an action that's being done that needs to perhaps be done in another way? Intention is everything. As an example of this, the Buddha himself. There's a sutta in the Pali Canon which involves Sati, the fisherman's son, who unfortunately began to propound a view that was at odds with the Buddha's teaching. He claimed that consciousness was eternal, essentially, which the Buddha maintains it was not. Sati got himself in further hot water by claiming that that was actually what the Buddha taught. When the Buddha became aware of this, he had Sati, the fisherman's son, brought to him and gave him a right old dressing down. Not only that, but he said to Sati, you'll be remembered for this view of yours because I'll now speak to the monks. And he gave this entire discourse based on what Sati, the fisherman's son, had said, which is now enshrined in the Pali Canon. And 2,500 years ago, poor old Sati, the fisherman's son, is still being blamed. Now, was the Buddha behaving unwisely? Of course not. He was acting out of compassion for Sati, the fisherman's son. Sometimes you hear it said of spiritual teachers, why do you have to be so hard on so-and-so or such-and-such? And I don't really know how to reply to that, because it's like they're saying, imagine walking along a coastal path, and you're up on a cliff, and you see a man in front of you running full pelt towards the cliff edge. It's only natural to say, "Hey, you, don't go that way. You will kill yourself." Now imagine that man were to look at you, grimace, turn back to what he was doing and run headlong towards the cliff edge. You might scream, shout, "Hey, you, you're in danger, look out." Now imagine somebody taking you by the arm and saying, "Do you have to be so hard on him?" Sometimes blaming is very necessary, especially in a spiritual way. Then I thought, well, we're going to have to find out about ways of responding to blame. And I came up with a few examples of ways of responding to blame. Firstly, I thought, well, there's fear of blame. There's the fear of being blamed, which everyone in the working world has to face. Then I thought about it some more and realized that there are two kinds of fear of blame. There may be some more, but these are the two that I came up with. There's unwholesome fear of blame, and there's wholesome fear of blame. Unwholesome fear of blame is where there is a lot of self-concern, and there's an attachment to a result in something, or a desire to resist, a desire to avoid painful feelings. An example of this may be where perhaps a meditator's come into the centre to do some work, and they begin being given a task, perhaps. Say they've been given some cooking to do. And there is an unwholesome fear of being blamed for not getting it right, for getting it wrong, for mucking it up, for making it taste horrible. Of course, as a result of that kind of fear of blame, what happens? There's a lot of worry, a lot of fear present, and the meal comes out not quite as good as it would had the mind been free of such a disabling mental state. So that's an unwholesome way of responding to blame, potential blame. But there's also a wholesome fear of blame. A wholesome fear of blame is what some people call one's conscience. It's putting a brake on inefficient, unwholesome action that will result in pain in the future. The Buddha called fear of blame in this context a guardian of the world. So, for instance, you're going to perform an action. You consider that action and realize perhaps that it's based in hatred, say. And your conscience tells you not to act upon it, because there is a fear that were you to do so, that would be perceived as blameworthy by others. And so there is a natural break. But interestingly, I then discovered that the fear is inevitable, one way or t'other. There'll be fear of blame before the action. If that fear of blame is taken seriously and a restraint is put in place and a break is put in place, then that fear will simply arise and pass away, and one will be left with a clear conscience, blamelessness. However, if the action is carried through, there will then be fear of being found out, fear of being caught, fear of being blamed for your actions. So that's something to bear in mind in your mindfulness practice, is that fear will arise. But do you understand what kind of fear it is? Do you understand what kind of blame it is? Is it wholesome or is it unwholesome? Now, sometimes when we respond to blame, we respond by considering whether or not the blame is justified. Is it justified? Did you really act in a way that warranted the blame you're now receiving? Or was it unjustified? In terms of Puddhatamma, it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. Blame, in Buddhism, is a worldly condition. That means that, having been born human in the human realm, it is inevitable that from time to time we will all experience blame. Even the Buddha experienced blame. We'll also experience praise as well, and we can't do anything about that. It's inevitable. Take into consideration also past karma, past actions. They might have been performed in the distant past. You might not even remember having acted in that way. And yet, the results must come about. It may very well be that you don't know what the origin of the blame that is now present was. What you experience now is what you might call unjustifiable blame. You didn't do it, it wasn't you. And yet, here you are with the painful feelings, which are the resultant of the past actions. So in terms of Buddhism, whether it was justified or unjustified is of little account. There's a lovely story of a Zen monk, which some of you may know, which includes in it a lovely way to respond to blame, if your mindfulness is sufficient. There was a Zen monk who was accused of fathering an illegitimate child. The young lady accused the Zen monk of being the father, and so the parents bundled up the babe and took it to the Zen monk and said, "Here you are, you look after it, it's yours." The Zen monk replied, "Is that so?" For a year, the young lady kept a lid on the truth, but eventually, after a year, it came out. It wasn't the Zen monk at all who was the father, it was the lad down at the market. The parents got up, went down to see the Zen monk, and mind, the Zen monk had looked after this child for a year, fed it, clothed it, bathed it, other things you do with small children. And you can tell I haven't had any kids, can't you? Three and I'm struggling. Yes, so how did the Zen monk respond to this new state of affairs? Having looked after this child for so long, and the parents just coming saying, "It's not you, it's the lad down the market." He said, "Is that so?" Like I say, it's a lovely way to respond to blame if your mindfulness is sufficient. But there's a problem here. Why is it so difficult just to accept blame when it comes along? Let me try and explain this with another crazy lawsuit that I came across. This is how to deal with blame unskillfully. There was a man in America, I think it was in Washington State, so it's up the north of North America, and it was in winter time, and he robbed a bank. And he tried to make an escape, and the authorities chased him. So in order to try and get away, he went into the woods. And he spent, I think, something like 2 days in the woods in order to try and escape from the authorities. Eventually, the authorities caught up with him. And in the meantime, he had got frostbite in his toes and had to have them amputated. So he filed a lawsuit against the sheriff for not catching him quickly enough. This is how to deal with blame unskillfully. Go through it carefully and you see that initially fear of blame of the wholesome variety was not attended to by the robber. As a consequence, having conducted the robbery, he then experienced another kind of fear of blame, the fear of being caught, the fear of going to court, the fear of a long prison sentence as a result of his actions. Reflecting on this, he experienced intense painful feeling. Well, I imagine he would. And consequently headed off to the forests in order to escape being caught. However, this resistance merely increased the pain levels. His insistence that it was more important for him to maintain his freedom meant that he was willing to go into a snowy forest in the middle of winter and hang out for 2 days and allow his toes to get frostbite rather than get caught. Resistance breeds pain. Pain breeds resistance, and the whole thing goes round and round in a sorry circle. How do you deal with blame skillfully? You follow the Noble Eightfold Path. First of all, you get your views straight. You get views straight about karma and about rebirth. What we experience by way of painful feeling that may indeed come from being blamed, justly or unjustly, does actually emerge from our own actions. And if you take rebirth into consideration too, then we will experience the painful resultants going back aeonically into the past. So getting your views straight will help enormously when dealing with blame. Living by sila, living by an ethical discipline, will help to reduce opportunities for blame to arise. If you're abiding by the precepts, then the unwholesome variety of fear of blame is not going to arise. There's going to be blamelessness, a sense of confidence in one's own actions. And the supporting conditions for other people to blame you are severely reduced thereby. Also, to develop compassion will help with blame, actually handing out blame. A compassionate attitude is one that recognises that we all fare on according to our actions, and we all experience pleasant results and painful results, and that everyone is actually learning about what works and what doesn't work. So if one develops as a meditation, the meditation of compassion, then one imbues one's mind with a sense that even though this being has clearly made a mistake, he is or she is still human, just like me. And we all make mistakes. So it's the finger waving that doesn't need to be done. Of course, there may be an occasion where you need to speak to somebody about correcting a fault at work, say, for instance. But the finger waving, the blaming, doesn't actually have to be a part of it. So developing compassion and loving kindness will also help with dealing with blame. There's another aspect to this, of course, which is wisdom. Understanding the dynamics of blame, the process behind how it is that it comes into being and how to deal with it. There's always a very, very simple process at work. You're blamed. Inevitably, based upon that sense contact, that hearing, a painful feeling will arise. It is inevitable. It is a resultant. It happens. Also, will arise a tendency towards perhaps a justification of one's own actions and a condemnation of the other person's actions. It's inevitable. That tendency, if it's there, has been developed over a very long period of time. It is inevitable that the tendency towards blame will arise in the mind. It's then that we have a wonderful opportunity. Having accepted the sense contact arises, having accepted that the painful feeling is there, having accepted that the tendency towards justification or condemnation arises in the mind, we then are able to restrain from any further involvement with that condemnation. Always remember that you always have three choices. You can indulge blame, or condemnation, if you prefer. You can suppress it, or you can mindfully acknowledge it and choose to restrain any further involvement with it. If you indulge it, what happens? As a result of indulging the blame, in the future, it might be the immediate future, it might be sometime in this lifetime or in a future lifetime, you will experience a painful resultant because of having indulged in the blame. This is unwholesome blame. Blame that has greed or hatred at its root. If you suppress it, what happens? Mentally, you go through the condemnation, the blame, but there's no outward expression of it. What would happen? As a consequence of that, you will experience more painful feelings in the future. Let me try and explain that. Have you ever met somebody who's so completely nice that you just really wanted to hit them? I don't mean that cruelly. They're so nice, it's just too good to be true. What are they doing other than suppressing and not acknowledging what they're actually really thinking? And it's actually kind of obvious, especially when you get your mindfulness going and a little bit of concentration, it really does become quite obvious that that's what they're doing. Everyone will try to rile that person, to annoy them, to do anything they can in order to get some kind of honest response, even if it's negative. So that's what tends to happen with somebody who suppresses a lot. They will get niggled. It's kind of seems to be natural to human behavior. There is a third way, and the third way is the mindful way. To become aware in your own subjective experience of this process, that the contact always leads to a feeling which leads to a response. And it's the ability to recognize the response and restrain it, recognizing what it is. That's the wise approach. Now, of course, that doesn't happen all at once, and that's why we practice meditation, that's why we practice keeping the precepts, that's why we practice coming along on a Wednesday night and doing the study classes. The whole gamut of walking the Noble Eightfold Path is all to bring us to that point where we can see clearly the mechanics of blame, how it actually comes into being, and how to let go of it. What's the consummation of walking the Noble Eightfold Path in terms of coming to understand blame? There's a lovely little story in the commentaries to the suttas about Sariputta, who we have to remember was the Buddha's right-hand man. He was a man of astonishing spiritual maturity. He was well regarded by everyone in the Sangha. He was walking on alms one day, and a little seven-year-old novice came up to him and said, "The hem of your outer cloak has just come down an inch." And he blamed the great Sariputta for this. What did Sariputta do? He turned to the boy, brought his hands together in salutation, and said, "The child is my teacher. The child is my teacher." What can we learn from this little story? Blame, being blamed, is an opportunity to learn. Whoever is blaming is actually giving us an opportunity to understand blame and responses to blame, how the whole gamut of blame actually works. Being blamed is an opportunity to learn to surrender. To surrender the egotistical need to justify oneself, to condemn others. It's an opportunity to learn to surrender to the way life really is. And that's the hallmark of spiritual maturity. And that's the hallmark of those who walk the Noble Eightfold Path to its conclusion. They surrender to life. They surrender to the way it is. After all, contact is transient. Feeling is transient. The tendency towards blame is transient. Being blamed is transient. It all just arises and passes away. That which arises and passes away, is it fitting, is it suitable to grasp onto that as me or as mine? Surely it isn't. What about the enlightened being? Well, as we've heard before, the enlightened being is blamed. The Buddha was blamed. Enlightened beings are blamed. Angulimala, the infamous murder robber who became a monk and became enlightened, went off for alms in a village and he got pelted with bricks. He went back to see the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Bear it. It's the results of your past actions. Just bear it." Which, of course, he did. Although the enlightened being is blamed, it's like a gong that's broken. There are simply no reverberations. The blame arises. There's a painful feeling. There's a tendency towards justifying and condemning. It's all seen and understood. And it's just let go of. Well, it's not even let go of. It's just that's just what happens. There's no self-view in regard to it at all. It just happens. It arises and passes away. Just a few seconds after the incident, there'll be nothing remaining. Nothing. There'll be no remainder. There'll just be a sweet, perfect, happy emptiness that is reality. And this means that the enlightened being can never, in Alan's words, which I always loved, again be caught in the traps of man. Can never again be caught in other people's expectations. Can never fall for their blaming. Because blame has been understood. It simply arises due to causes and passes away. There's simply nothing to do. When the non-dual is understood, tried this analogy out with some people recently, and then they looked at me quizzically, so I'll give it another go. Can a knife cut itself? There's no more chance of an enlightened being taking blame seriously or being caught up in blame and all that than there is of a knife cutting itself. When you've understood the non-dual, you have understood. Thank you very much.